All right, so tonight's shiur is actually the 33rd in the series, and by coincidence, it's my grandfather's yahrzeit, so we'll learn Le'ilut Nishmaso. By an even stranger coincidence, my grandfather, Olah Shalom, gave a shiur for many years in Novi on Shabbos afternoon in Young Israel, Pelham Parkway, in Yiddish, so I didn't quite follow it even when I visited. But it's a fitting tribute that at least we're continuing in that derech. So we'll learn Le'ilut Nishmaso Rav Ephraim Michel ben Arav Zev Nechemi Halevi, Tein Nishmaso Tzur B'Tzorachayim. All right, tonight we discuss a very interesting and complicated story. The Tanakh reveals to us human nature in all its varieties and manifestations. And nothing is omitted. Every aspect of life is contained in Tanakh. And Ein Chadosh Tachas HaShemesh, there's really nothing new either that happens in the world. We think that we create all sorts of new dynamics and situations and circumstances. In fact, it's not so. Everything's been done before, but we think it's new. And certainly, the lives of the Gedolim, the great ones, throughout Tanakh, were never typical or routine. On the contrary, their greatness lies in the way they dealt with the unusual circumstances in which they found themselves. And certainly it was true of David in every case that we've examined so far. And it's the case with tonight's bizarre triangle. David, his wife Michal, and her husband Palti. So how in fact did that come about? Doesn't sound like a happy domestic setting on the surface. How did it happen? So Michal we've met before. Michal was Shaul's daughter, and we encountered her first in Perek Yudches of Shmuel Aleph, in number one. So as the story was examined back then, David had killed Goliath and become very popular, and Shaul had become very jealous of him. So he was looking for a number of ways to get rid of David, including killing him. So the Torah, the Navi tells us that Michal, Shaul's daughter, loved David very much. And first Shaul promised his other daughter, Merav, to David, and then stabbed him in the back, basically, to antagonize him, and gave Merav in marriage to Adriel. And then Michal told her father she loved David, and Shaul accepted. And Shaul said, "Et neno lo, I'll give her to David, usihilo lemokesh, and she'll be a snare. I'll use her to entrap David, usihibo b'yad plishtim, and the plishtim will attack him." What did he devise? So you start number one. It's pasuk chaf bez. Vayitzav Shaul asavadov. He commanded his servant, saying, "Dabru el David balot lemor, speak to David secretly and tell him." I want you to be my son-in-law. And David, Shaul's servants come to David and they tell him this, and he says, "Who am I to be the son-in-law of the king?" And they say to him, "Afal pichein, this is what the king wants." Vayomer Shaul kosher mu David, ein chefetz lamelech b'mohar. The king does not want any dowry in exchange for his daughter. All he wants is 100 foreskins from the plishtim. So it sounds like a very cheap dowry. The catch is how you acquire the foreskins. That is not as easy as it sounds to us. So it means that David would have to go and kill 100 plishtim and then cut off their foreskins. So you remember we discussed this last year. What was Shaul's intent? Twofold. Either that David would die attempting to kill the plishtim from whom he would procure the foreskins, or David would die in retaliation because the plishtim would come after him for abusing the bodies of the slain plishtim. So either way, David would be a dead man. That was Shaul's intention. Didn't work out like that. David agreed. Vayakom David vayelechu vanashav. He went with his men. Vayach ba'plishtim mosayim ish. He killed 200 plishtim, not 100. All right? I guess it's easier to get a wedding ring, but it's more expensive. So he killed 200 plishtim. So he brought 200 arlos to show twice what was asked. And vayitain lo shaul es michal bito lisha. Shaul gave Michal, his daughter, to David as a wife. Vayar Shaul vayedat yashemim David. So Shaul knew again, as it happens, the phrase recurs in Shmuel Aleph. Shaul saw that God was with David. Umichal bashur lahivasu. Michal's daughter loved David. And then it continues, Vayosef Shaul leorom epnei Davidod. Shaul became more and more afraid of David. He became David's enemy, and that hatred, that enmity grew over the years. So in fact, David wins, marries Michal. We discussed the story already, how immediately Shaul sent his men to capture, to kidnap and kill David. Michal found out about it, told David to escape, helped him escape, and he put a figurine in the bed and told the men of Shaul that he's ill, wait till the morning, and that just gave David more time to escape. So that's what Michal did. Now fast forward to 2, which is where we left off last week. David marries Abigail, the widow of Nabal HaKarmeli, and then at the end of the perek, it says that Achinoam lokach David miYisrael. David married Abigail, and he married also another woman, Achinoam, from Israel, and Gam Shtehen, both of them were his wives also. What's the ribui? Gam Shnehem? Gam means in addition to Michal. So now, in fact, David has three wives, Michal, Abigail, and Achinoam. If you can handle it, the more the merrier. That's what we say. What happens then? Next pasuk. Vishol nasanes Michal bito eishes David lepalti ben Laish asher migalim. Shaul then intervenes. David is in hiding with Achinoam and Abigail. Shaul takes his daughter Michal and gives her to Palti ben Laish. And ostensibly they marry. And the Radak asks the question. So now you have this threesome, this triangle. David, who's still married to Michal, who's now married somehow, some way, to Palti ben Laish. The Radak asks the questions in 3. V'yesh l'shol, hare Michal eish is David oiso. Michal was David's wife. Ech nosno l'palti. How could Palti marry her? Kiddushin is not even tovsin, by the way, if someone's an eish ish. The marriage is not effective, kalocho. Veich lakacha palti ben Laish. Yeshes David. How did Palti marry her? Everybody knew it. She's the princess of Israel, Shaul's daughter. So Palti knew that she was married. How did he marry her? V'im tomar ki ba'averu v'isser asu adavos. Let's say, things happen. Today also things happen. So they violated. It was wrong. He was wrong. Shaul was wrong. Michal were all wrong. So then the question is, Eich lokcha achrei ken David? How did David remarry her? V'hinei haisa sura lo. She was forbidden to him. Kevan shenivala beratzon la'acher ba'udashto. Once she lived with Palti, while still married to David, she became forbidden, prohibited to David. And yet we see in number 4 in Shmuel Beis, after Shaul dies, killed in war, a civil war breaks out between the followers of Shaul and David and his followers. And Avner Ben-Ner, Shaul's chief of staff, has a falling out with Ishbosheth, who's the surviving son of Shaul. They have a falling out. And Avner offers a pact to David. David agrees with one condition, says in 4. Vayishlach David malochim el Ishbosheth Ben Shaul emor, Tanoas ishti es Michal asher erasti li b'mea orlos plishtim. Give me back my wife, Michal, whom I betrothed with 100 foreskins of the plishtim. Vayishlach ishboshes vayikochem eim ish. Ishbosheth then sends for her, and they take her from a man, Me'im Paltiel ben Laish. They take her from the home of Palti, who's now called in the Novi Paltiel. Vayelech ita isha holochu v'cho achareha ad bachurim. He, Palti ben Laish, accompanies Michal crying until Bachurim. There they part. Vayomer elov Avner, lech shuv vayashov. Avner sends to Palti, go back, and Palti goes back. But until then, halochu vacho, he's crying over the loss of this woman in his life. So the questions are manifold, but the questions are the radax questions. One, how did it happen to begin with? And secondly, how did he marry her? Again, how did he take her back if she lived with Palti ben Laish? Now, who is this Michal Bashol? So, she's no slouch. She was a very independent person. It's part of the mystery here, by the way. She was not the type of woman to allow herself to be used as chattel. Not that any woman is, but she was not the type. She was very strong-willed, very independent, so much so that Chazal note, number 6, she's one of the, prototypical strong women, Michal Bas Kushi, Haisa Manachas Tfilin, Blomichu Bo Chachomim. She was that great woman who in the ancient world wore tefillin, and the Chachomim did not protest. They may have been afraid of her, but they did not protest. They did not intervene to stop her. Michal was characterized really by one trait that Rav Aviner, as a sefer on the women in Tanakh called Eshes Chayil, notes in number 7. Gadluto ruchanit shel Shaul, shayom mishichmo v'mala. Shaul is described from his shoulders and up as the spiritual personality of the generation. That spiritual greatness of Rola Michal, it was transmitted to his daughter. Shigamhi aita balat shir komo atzum. She was a grand spiritual personality in her own right. So in fact, he says that usually a son succeeds the father in terms of his spiritual powers. Here, no. Here, achabati babua ne'mana shokach pinim abayit. Here, Michal was the true reflection, the faithful reflection of her father's spiritual greatness, with this one catch. It's not a limitation on her spiritual greatness. On the contrary, it probably enhances it. But it's what distanced her from her father. She was selflessly committed to David. And you see, when it came down to a choice between her father and David, she chose David, which, by the way, is really what Halacha perceives the greatness of a wife. Al-Kenya, and a husband for that matter. Al-Ken Yazavish, Esaviv Esimo, V'Dovak Bishto, V'Yulav Asar Echad. At a certain time, the parental child, the parent-child relationship takes a back seat, a secondary role to the husband-wife relationship. So in fact, she epitomized that. And she saved David not once, but at least twice from her father. Michal and David, that two loves we discussed, Michal v'Yonatan avushemet David. The Medrash says, Michal mimaletet ato min abayit, v'Yonatan min achutz. Michal saved him inside the house. Yonatan saved him from outside the house, the external threats. And together they successfully protected David. But the reality of Michal really makes it even stranger. No doubt Michal is in the middle, and her father uses her against David, but yet how did she allow this to happen? Why did Shaul give her away? And how does the incident unfold? And how does it? How do they recapture their marriage? We have to fill in the blanks, the gaps in the story, because in fact all the Navi says is that one pasuk. V'Shaul nasan es Michal bito eishes David lefalti ben laish Hashem yigalem. That's it. Nothing else is explained or elaborated upon in the Navi. So what happened? First of all, we have to say also why it happened. Why Shaul did such a thing. How could he do such a thing? And how did David undo it in the end? So there are a number of possibilities, 6 at least, but 6 we'll discuss, that the Mefarshim suggest. First, look at number 5. It's the Medrash Rabbah in Bereishis Rabbah, Parsha Lamed Beis. The pasuk says in Tehillim, Tovei Dovrei Chazov Ish Domim Mimro Yaseiv Hashem, that the Dovrei Chazov, people who speak falsehood, they should be destroyed. Who's that referring to? That's Medaber B'Doeg V'Achitofel. So Achitofel we'll get to, but Doeg we discussed a few weeks ago. Doeg is the one who instigated and carried out the massacre of Nov Irakonim. So what did they do? Zehite Gila Royos Ushrichus Domim. Both of them permitted sexual immorality as well as homicide. What's the case? Nachman Breder Shmuel Bar Nachmani explains as follows. Omar L'Shaul, Doeg, who was the Aves and the head of the Sanhedrin, explained, told Shaul, when he wanted at this point to again punish David, try to kill him, harass him, etc. V'chi yesh ishus l'David, Doeg said, is it possible that David is even able to remain married? Halomori b'malchusu v'choshur b'meis. David is a rebel against the king. He's considered dead. And Mori b'malchus, the king can just execute him without any witnesses, any trial, any deliberations. He's good as a dead man. It's choshev k'meis. Can a dead man be married? No. V'achshov hitir konato v'asalto zidvitus. So therefore, Doeg said to him, we can undo this union. It's as if Michal is a widow because he's not alive anymore. He's not considered alive. All you have to do is make kitvitus, the zitvitus. Zitvitus is a death warrant. You sign the death warrant and David is considered dead. Ukilu umes. V'damo mutar, v'shto muteras. Based on this psak from Doeg Hadomis, the head of the Sanhedrin, Amad Shaul v'nosan Michal Ishis David al piv l'palti ben layish. So who is the villain in this account? Doeg Hadomi. Shaul was looking to, he's looking for this psak. Happens, by the way, people become attached to a certain psak and then go seek the Rav who will issue that psak. So Shaul liked what he heard, but it really was Doeg. On his own, Shaul would not have come to this conclusion. He may have found some other way to torment David. But this conclusion was given by Doeg. According to this, the marriage was not annulled, but simply ended, voided by putative death. All right? It's over. And therefore, Michal is free to marry. Of course, Halacha was spurious, specious. The consequences of that, so we'll discuss. Doesn't explain that we have to discuss. That's correct. Second approach we find in the Gemara, in number 8. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Yotes Amud Beis, goes into the whole story, the whole relationship of David and Michal and Meirav, Tanya. Omer lo Rabbi Yehuda, Noshim Uriah Slomi Beis HaMelech, David married women who were fit for him. U'mayninu Meirav u'Michal. He married these two. So the Talmidim asked Rabbi Yossi, how could it be? Heich nosa David shtech hayos b'chayei. You can't marry two sisters in their lifetime. Amar lahen, Michal achar misas Meirav nisa. Michal, he married. Meirav was already dead. All right? Rabbi Shimon Karcha omer, kidushei tos hoylo b'meirav. Meirav's marriage to David was not a real marriage because it was based on an error. The error being, he did not want to marry her, and as we saw the pasuk before, Shaul gave her right away to Adriel, so they were never really married. Shenemar, Tanos ishti es Michal, asher irasti li b'me'al os plishtim. David says to Avner, give me my wife Michal. So who's his wife? He considers Michal his wife. My Talmuda, how does the pasuk teach us anything? Omer af papa, Michal ishti, v'lo Meirav ishti. And what was the Kiddush Eitos? The Kiddush Eitos was based on the following. Shaul HaMelech had promised that the one who killed Goliath, would be Zochah to a number of things. Among them, the king's daughter, great wealth, V'hoyo ish asher yakenu, yashrenu HaMelech osher gadol, and my daughter too. Azal Kotlai, so David went, killed Goliath. Amar lo, so Shaul said to David, Milva islach gabai. I have a debt. I'm owed you a debt. The makadesh b'milva ainu mikudeshes. One who marries a woman with a debt is not, the kedushin is not valid. So now there's a big inyan halach that's derived from here, subject to much discussion. Let's take a brief minute to understand it. Makadesh b'milva. So if a man marries a woman, in our context, he gives her a ring. Something of value. Something of shoveh pruto. Harayat mikudeshes li b'tabazo. Kedas Moshe Yisrael. He gives her something of value, and with that, the woman agrees to relinquish certain rights that she has. She becomes forbidden to everybody else in the world and permitted to him. So Gemara in Kiddushin has a host of cases. That's the typical case. That's what we find every day now. But it wasn't so common. Let's say there are other things that are of value, but not necessarily an easily quantifiable value. So the Gemara has a discussion of someone who's Mekadesh a woman b'milve, with a debt, all right? For example, Reuven and Sarah, all right? Reuven wants to marry Sarah. Reuven lends Sarah $1,000. Sarah owes Reuven the money. Reuven says to Sarah, I want to marry you, and the shoveh pruta that I will give you is the waiver of the debt. You're mikudeshes li b'mechila zo. I'll waive this milva, which is a loan, which is a debt. So that the Gemara says, Hamakadesh b'milva ain't a mikudeshes. Even though it's worth a pruta, because there's nothing in hand, so therefore, it's not considered valid, ain't a mikudeshes. So in fact, David assumed that Merab was his wife because of the, in this case, who's the debt owed to? Shaul owes a debt to David, Shaul being the father of the bride. David waives the debt to the father, acquires the bride. Shaul said no. Halach is hamikadesh b'milva ena mikudeshes. No kiddushin. So therefore, Shaul took it upon himself again to stick it to David. Take Merav, give her to Adriel. Amar lei. So then he said to David, Ibois de'eten loch Michal. You want? I'll give you Michal, my daughter. So David wanted her. There's something else. Up the ante. Now it's not just for the Osher Gadol, that from Goliath, but I want the 100 foreskins. David, the good son-in-law, goes out, gets the foreskins. Ozel Isile brings them to a show, nicely wrapped with a bow. Omar Lay, then he says to David, David says to a show, now milve upruta isloch gabai. Now there's a debt that you owe me that I will waive, as well as this pruta that I'm giving you. Pruta is something of the smallest value, so 100 foreskins ostensibly have the value of a pruta. What are they good for? I will see in a moment. So David said, the kiddushin, well, it was a strange wedding, clearly, but David said, the kiddushin is through the milva, the waiver of the loan, the waiver of the debt, rather, as well as giving the shoveh pruta, the mea arlos, to Shaul. Shaul savar, so you have machlokas and halacha between Shaul and David. Shaul savar, milve pruta daite amilve. When there's a loan that's to be waived, and a pruta that's to be given, what is the woman considered to be of more value? Well, the waiver of the loan has more value in real terms. So therefore, her intention in kiddushin is to accept not the pruta, but the foregoing of the loan. So therefore, it becomes just mekadesh b'milveh, ainu mikudeshes. So Shaul held that they're not married. The kiddushin was never valid. That's what he held. Whereas David held, milveh pruta daiteya pruta. If there's a debt to be waived and a pruta to be offered, so a woman wants to get married, she accepts the pruta. Look at Rashi number 9. There's milva pruta. Milva is the osher gadol. Shenis chayavti loch bishvil Goliath. The great wealth I promised you, I owe you for killing Goliath. And the pruta is the shoveh kesef. That's the mea orlos plishtim. So shol sovar daitei demekadesh lemekadesh b'milva d'chashiva. That the intention of the woman, she focuses on the waiver of the loan. So therefore, lav kiddushay ninu. She could then marry to someone else. But David Savar Daita Apruta, Mishamochi Karilashti. He maintains that Daita Pruta, she focuses on the Pruta, and therefore she's really his wife. So he could say, Tuna es Ishti es Michal. Yes. Not necessarily so. That's actually a machlokas achronim, where the people who have a common law relationship require a get. All right, big machlokas achronim. Rav Henkin actually said yes. Rav Moshe Feinstein said no. Reason being that, not necessarily, but we have a chazaka ein adam osa beiloso beilas znus. A person who's living with a woman does not make his relationship with her just mere fornications. Rather, he wants to formalize it in the sense of a marriage. He doesn't want to be just, you know, just a relationship of free love, but some formal construct. So if we see a man and a woman living together, the chazaka is that they're married. Because of that chazaka, Rav Henkin said, only way to undo that chazaka is through a get. Say, right, even when the couple living here for a long time, he required a get. Rav Moshe said not, and you see, for example, chazaka is very nice, but it might fly in the face of the reality of America 2003, where you have maybe 30-40% of couples who reside together who are not married. So you can't say chazaka ein adam osa beiloso beilaznus when in fact it's quite common in America, as are other types of unions apparently, that the Gemara doesn't speak about. It's more common than we think. So chazaka doesn't exist. Chazaka might exist in a normal society which aspires to some type of virtue. But in a decadent society, it doesn't. L'maisa will try, practically, if a situation arises, try to effect the get. But if we can't, we're not going to stop a person from marrying. So you had that machlokas. Now, Machlokas then, Shaul said, that's it, she's not married, there's no Kiddushin, and therefore I will just take her from David and give her to Palti. Now, that's one possibility. The Gemara says, you boy, same, another possibility. Everybody holds Milva Pruta, Daita Milva. But, Shaul Savar Lo Chazav Lo Midei, what are 100 foreskins worth? About what it sounds like. Nothing. So it's not even Shavet Pruto, which case there's no Pruto here. V'David Savar, no, Chazal Kalbe V'Shunre. You can give foreskins to dogs and cats. They'll eat it. All right. So that's one approach, that it was done, and it was done through through Paskening. The Shaila, Shaul said it was permitted because there's no Kiddushin, and David said it was not permitted because there was no Kiddushin. I'm sorry. Shaul said there's no Kiddushin, therefore he could send Michal to marry Palti, and David said there was a Kiddushin, so she's my wife. Yes?
Is there any problem with mutilating these Inuvishkins to do what
the problem in mutilating the Plishtim. We actually discussed that last year. We discussed the area. Why, in fact, would he make such a request, Shaul? So I refer you to the tape. I think it's 250 in the office. But because, again, the Arla for us is very significant. The Arla makes us into B'nai Bris, as opposed to the Plishtim, who, in fact, Goliath boasted that he was an Arel. And so he was referred to as this Arel. David said to Shaul, how long will you let this Arel insult the living God of Israel? So if you're asking, is there an isser to take off the foreskin of the enemy in battle, or generally, do we have the same problem of nivul hames for a non-Jew as we do for a Jew? It could be that we don't. All right, that's why we don't object necessarily to autopsies on non-Jews as we would on Jews. Nevertheless, there is certain decorums of war that you wouldn't do that for fear that others would do it to you as well. So in ordinary sense, it wouldn't be done. It was an unusual request, although, again, in war, both ancient and modern, it's not that uncommon. You know, you don't have to look to the arlos of the plishtim, the scalps of the Indians, right, in the Indian-American wars. I don't know if you can say Indians anymore. They have another name. But the people we know as Indians, right. I'm also Native American. The people we know as Indians, so that's how they would fight. You know, Rahman al-Islam, the Syrians are known for the mutilation of the bodies of Israeli POWs. So it exists in war. But here's a specific case. Ordinarily, it's not done. Shaul made this unusual request. There's no doubt that if the Plishtim made the possession of the Arla into something that was noble, desirable, then taking off their Arlos would be a great deterrent to their future wars against Israel. So that's part of the dynamic as well. That's one part of the Gemara, that in fact was based on a machlokas and halacha. The Gemara continues, though, discussing how Michal raised the children of her sister Merav, and the Gemara concludes, based on comparisons of psukim, Makish kidushay Merav la Adriel, kidushay Michal la Palti. Makidushay Michal la Palti bavera, af kidushay Merav la Adriel bavera. So the Gemara spares no bones. What Shaul did was wrong, should not have married Michal to Palti, it was bavera. Then the question then becomes, how did David take her back? Just like Merav to Adriel was also bavera. All right. She's an Eishes Ish. Paskin wrong. Merav could have been David's wife also, right? But apparently that kiddushin was never effected. But so that the Aveira was different. Look at number 10. All right, the Malbim quotes a number of these opinions, and he has a different insight into Shaul's motivation, which makes it more human to us. Why did Shaul do this? Because he saw the pasuk says David now took two wives in addition to his daughter, who was David's wife, without her permission. This is like a person despising the princess. Lokachas olet tsara litzror, to take adversaries into the home. Most women object to a polygamous relationship, correct? Just an informal survey. Most object. So you would have to at least... Please, discuss this after this year. You'd have to at least gain her permission. So as not to ask her permission, it's not only an insult to her as Shaul's daughter, but it's an insult to her because she's a bas melech, being treated that way. So then David had to run because he knew that Shaul was angry at him. But based on this, at least, his motivation doesn't seem that unrealistic, that far-fetched, or even that hateful. Rather, his motivation simply was to preserve the honor of his daughter. Doesn't answer still how David can marry her. That we'll get back to. Before that, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Yud Tesam at Beis, continues with a very interesting pshat, and you see Palti becomes one of the great figures in Tanakh. We noted already, when Shaul married Michal, the Navi called him Palti. And when David went to retrieve her, she was accompanied by Paltiel. How was Kael added to his name? Ksiv Palti, Ksiv Paltiel, number 11. Omer B'Yochanan, Palti Shmo, his name was Palti. V'loma Nikra Shmo Paltiel, why was he called Paltiel? Shepalato Kael min Havero, because God saved him from sin. Palat means a refuge, to be saved. God saved him from sin. How was he saved from sin? They're in the bed. He put a sword between their two beds. And he said, Kola oseg bedover zeh, yidkar becherev zeh. Whoever wants to engage in relations will be stabbed by the sword, meaning they had a platonic relationship. They never lived together. Because Palti knew it was wrong, and Michal knew it was wrong, so therefore they never consummated their pseudo-marriage, all right? And how do we know it was true? Because Shem Shomayim, God added his name to Palti's name as a verification that that's in fact what happened. In fact, the Mishpat Zov notes, you see in the Torah, when just a few weeks ago we read that Yaakov Avinu spoke about Elokei Avram Pachad Yitzchok. Why Pachad Yitzchok, not Elokei Yitzchok? So the Torah says, Rashi there says, God is not Meshatek his name to someone who's alive. Because someone who's alive, you know, they could always sin, and then it's a Chil Hashem. After a person's dead, then God will be Meshatek his name. Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchok, Elokei Yaakov. See here, when was he called Paltiel? When she was sent away. And they could no longer sin, no longer in the framework where they could sin, because she's back with David. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu could testify, in fact, that he never sinned. Right. How does Radak say that they then lived together? What deduction can we make? Radak didn't accept the Gemara. So you're under no obligation to accept an Agadata. What's that?
Why is he,
so we'll get back to that also. Why is he crying? And why, in fact, is the, does the Navi say in 4 that she was taken, Mayim Isha, from her husband? Vayelchi ta Isha, her husband. So for that, the Mefarshim say, Rashi says there, in fact, he treated her like a wife. In terms of, Rashi says, Megadla u'mechaveva. He raised her, he cared, he supported her, and he loved her as well. Only thing that they did not have was marital relations. Now the Gemara uses this to learn a halacha of Yichud. Look at number 12. Taisus and Shabbos, that you'd give him a bez. Palti ben Laish, shenat zcher ben oleveino, ikul amema sherochot bimeno hoya b'yoseh. It's a question of halachas of Yichud. I'm sorry, not Yichud, but also living in one bed with a man who is with a woman who's a nidah. How could they do it? So the Tosha says not only was there a sword between them, but the bed was large enough that they weren't near each other. And haya pasuch l'shusarabim, they left the door open to the public domain. Shelo haya mishum yichud, so that everybody know they weren't even misyachay together, did not seclude themselves together. Or maybe Paskin, in fact, like Shaul, that they were, that Dov and Michal were not married. But even so, it was Machmir not to intrude on a relationship that David thought he had. Now, Palti becomes a great figure, really a model of restraint, as you can well imagine, in our annals. So, by the way, so continue the Gemara. So someone said, why is he Isha? So Rashi said he cared for her, he supported her like a wife. What's he crying about then? When she left him to go back to David. Ala mitzvah d'ozulmine, he was crying because he lost the mitzvah of showing restraint. Even havlagah is a mitzvah. To restrain yourself from sin, that's also a mitzvah. Ad bachurim, how far did he accompany her? Ad bachurim, what's bachurim? It's a place we don't know. It's a Gemara Darshans. Shenasu shneim kebachurim, shlotamu tambiya. The two of them were like teenagers, like people dating, who did not consummate their relationship physically. They always remained bachurim. Omer b'yochanan, tokpo shel Yosef, an v'sanuso shel Boaz. The greatness of Yosef, the strength of Yosef, in fleeing from Potiphar, in last week's Edra. So they weren't in bed together, and yet we say, Yosef HaTzadik, he ran away from Potiphar. That's nothing compared to what Boaz did. Because the Gemara says that Boaz, Rus climbed into his bed, and they were ready to consummate the act. The Gemara is graphic in their description, and then Boaz broke away. But Tokpo Shel Boaz, this greatness of Boaz, and the Sanusa Shel Palti Ben Laish, is nothing compared to Palti Ben Laish, to have temptation day after day, month after month, with this woman, who who Chazal say is one of the beautiful women of the world as well. So Palti becomes this symbol of great restraint. It was at least a year. At least a year. All right? The Gemara continues on Daf Chof, Amud Aleph, number 13. Omer B'Yochanan, Maidich Siv, Rabos Banos Asul Choyil. That's Yosef and Boaz. But Va'ata Lis Al Kulono, that's Palti Ben Laish. Omer Shmuel Bar Nachman, Rabbi Yonason, Sheker Achein, Ze Yosef. Hevel Yofi, Ze Boaz. Yiras Hashem Yitzalol, Ze Palti Ben Laish. That's Palti. You know, I just thought, I was going over this yesterday, and it just triggered me. In a Paltiel, the name stuck. Where did I see the name before? I haven't read one of Elie Wiesel's books in maybe 20 years, but one of the protagonists in his books is named Paltiel. And it just occurred to me that is what he must have meant by it. That since Paltiel is a symbol of restraint, so therefore the protagonist, the survivor, who holds his complaints in, that is Paltiel. For some reason, that's the only other time I heard the name. Is in one of his books. I could not tell you which book it's in. But that's Paltiel. According to this, there's no sin at all. There's no kiddushin. There's no problem for David to take her back at all. Now the Ralbag says that Paltiel's actions here, inactions here, his passivity, was well publicized. Everybody knew it. Yichud, doors open. People knew what was going on. So then David could take him back. The two other opinions, and that's the Radak and the Abarbanel.
Well, the
yes.
If we don't know of all these measures during the time when Michal and David were living together, obviously they were. When Shaul dispatched
the No, they weren't living together. Michal.
They were living together.
No, David was in hiding.
No, before when she helped him escape.
Yes, they lived very short time. Very short time together, right.
So then that should have been enough that they should have been destroyed, regardless of whether the Morlos was shoved or proved there or not.
Ah, because of Ein Adam Osabilis Nus.
That's what maybe they were.
That could be. But we see, Lamaisa, they were married. Right. That's true. Okay, let's see what Radak says. Radak takes a different approach. Yes. Well, Palti, yes. Palti's quite passive. That's correct. So we'll get back to that. That's right.
She's married to one guy, all of a sudden...
That's a good point. All right, we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that. Okay, what does Radak say, 14? So he rejects all the opinions. The common denominator, whenever there's a new mafarish of a new generation, he rejects everything that came before us. Radak quotes the opinions, then says no. Hanochem beinai ki get nasan David lemichal. David must have divorced Michal. Ki ra'inu shesona shol as sonei shol as David. Achash in his chatin imo. Ache barach the minei shol. So David saw his father hated him. See, what do I need this for? I have women throwing themselves at me. Why do I have to be with a father who wants to kill me? Vikiro shol ki David hoya boreach. Afal pisho yechozer elav lefam. He saw that David was fleeing. Even though in the early stages from him, he kept coming back. Shaul forced him to give a get, so Michal shouldn't be an aguna. And that's what David did, so Shaul gave her to Palti. V'im tomar, if you'll say, if so, im kain, also, hayulu David lach zira. David couldn't take him back. Because once you divorce your wife, and she marries someone else, even if they divorce, you can't take her back. It's pasuk in the Torah, it's an open mitzvah, one of tayag. Nema kilomi daita nosan zaget. He didn't do this willingly. The get. What's that? A divorcee can never marry Kohen. No.
No,
no,
no, no. He can't remarry the divorcee. He can't remarry
the same
woman.
A man can remarry his divorcee as long as she did not marry someone else in the interim.
Anywhere.
Anywhere. Yeah. I know people on their third marriage. On their third marriage to each other. You can, a Kohen can't do that. But a non-Kohen can keep remarrying the same wife. They like weddings. So, lo midaito nasan zaget. He did not do this of his own volition. The get tamausa be Yisrael shlokedin pasul, a forced get amongst Jews is invalid. So therefore, michal nivala betos. So when she did live, Radak also, they're literalists. They reject the Gemara that says he was a symbol of restraint. Apparently they say men are men. It can't be. So nivala betos, when she did live with Palti, it was based on a halachic error, velo nesral David. She was therefore not prohibited to David. It's as if she was cohabited with against her will. So therefore she's mutar slabaya. That's a very interesting area. Radak says because she was forced to give a get, the get is puzzle, and a toos based in, an error that based in makes in permitting a woman to remarry when her first husband is not in the picture anymore, it does not render her forbidden to her husband. Now this is actually a halacha, but in a limited context. Look at 16, I quote the Ramo. It's the last case in the Ramo, in Eben Ezer, Siman Yud Zayin Sif Nun Ches. Aval on suha lihina sef, a woman is forced to marry someone else. Osha horula based in bitos v'nises alpiyam, or based in rules incorrectly, and tells us she can remarry, heve ka'anusa. She's considered to be like a rape woman, umuteres lebaila rishon, she's allowed to return to her first husband. Just to limit the application, so it has to be a toos based in, meaning a halachic error, as opposed to the case, you know, tragic case, where, let's say, a wife assumes her husband dies in battle. Even for that matter, Edom come and say they saw him dead, and the basin permits her to remarry, and then they find out that he's alive, so then she's forbidden to him and to her second husband, because that's not considered toos based in. Toos based in is when they get the halacha wrong. That's toos based in, and that's the case here. They got the halacha wrong because it was a get musa. I hear they got the halacha right in a sense. It's a get musa, it's a forced get. A forced get does not divorce a woman, but if Basin relies on that get, they're incorrect in their interpretation of halacha. And that toast, that mistaken halacha, will not render her forbidden to her husband. So in fact, she could then remarry David, even if they did live together. That's what the Radak says. No, it doesn't. Although, I mean, I have to say, in any event, that he's a righteous person because he willingly submits himself to David's jurisdiction. They never say that. Right, right. Well, see, if David says, Tanois Ishti, because he didn't accept the get, he was forced to do it. So that's why he didn't consider it valid. That's why he could say Ishti. Right. It happens, people can be divorced too. Just reading Dinner Time tonight. Malcolm the Times said about Denny McLean. Remember Denny McLean? Last 30 game winner. So he unfortunately spent a lot of time in prison the last two decades. In 1987, his wife divorced him. After he was a month, he was sentenced to 7 years, 8 years, a month in jail. She wanted a divorce, and they divorced. He was sent away again a few years ago, just got out a few months ago, and went right back to her. And then he proposed to her recently. They're getting married again soon. So you see that, just because there's a relationship that's there, so it's ishti. He may be divorced, but he still considers her his wife. So too David still considered Michal's wife as well. The Abarbanel rejects everything I've said up till now. Number 15. Everything. He discounts everything, including the Gemara, that they didn't live together. He says, Divrei Ruach lo Efes. It's just empty words. And he has a different pshat entirely. You'll read the Abarbanel on your own. It sounds like I have to go to a wedding in a few minutes. But, yeah. What? It's a first wedding. But Saitel can't pick me up at 9:15, so we have 6 minutes. Abravanel says, there's one thing that the Pasuk does not say. If you go back to number 2, V'sho'ol nasanes michal bito eishes David l'palti ben layash Hashem nigalim. What does the Pasuk not say? which is a common usage in Tanakh, Ishto, correct. It doesn't say he gave Michal, David's wife, to Palti ben Laish le'isha. In fact, the Pasuk makes clear that he gave Ashes David to Palti ben Laish. So why did he give it to Palti ben Laish? So the Abarbanel says that Ames Barur, it's a little past the midway point, when Shaul saw that David took other wives, she was a young woman. So now David's with two other women. He thought maybe she would go off the derech. She'd be uncared for and would not be careful to preserve her father's honor. And certainly when she saw that her father's trying to kill her husband. So therefore, he brought her to Palti ben Laish, le'avda u'l'shamra ke'ish levito, that Palti should care for her as a daughter. As a daughter, li'asa ito be'amanus, reside with him, he would nurture her, take care of her. V'idame shehaya Palti adam zaken, it seems that Palti was an old man, and he was married, he had his own children, and so Shaul put her in a house, where she'd be able to thrive. Why then was he so sad when she had to leave? Because he became attached to her, but in a parental role, not in a marital role. Why does it say Isha? So that Rabbi Menel says Isha there means her master, not her husband, but the one who controls her physical life. What's that? Why couldn't she go back to her father's house? Right. That is a good question. Why wouldn't Shaul just take her back? I think the point was we'll get back to the question in a moment. Why was Shaul doing this entirely? I mean, where does this come from? Malbim has his point that he felt for his daughter's honor, wanted to preserve her. Something else is happening here that we know already. Right. Shaul, we know, is subject to terrible mood swings. Schizophrenic at this point. Erratic in his behavior. And David recognized always that the slightest offense, real or imagined, would set him off. And that's what happened, in fact. When David married these other two women, it set him off right away. So why then did David take Michal, who was David's love, just to torment him? That's all. Torment him. Now, granted, there's ambiguity. Abarbanel is, that's one shot. Even that would be hard for David to stomach. Nobody wants his wife taken away to be cared for by someone else. But to have his wife taken away to be given to another man for marriage, so that is aggravating to the point of rage. A man would not be able to tolerate such a thing, and that's what he wanted to do to David, who in fact by this time had lost his whole family. Remember, his parents and brothers were killed when they went to Moab. He had nobody. And now he takes his only wife, gives it to another man. He did this only to antagonize him. More, I would suggest, he did it also to smoke him out. Because again, Shaul turned. He couldn't capture David, but he knew, he thought at least, that David would come and attempt to rescue Michal. To take her into the palace, so there is no escape. He'd be killed there, obviously. He wouldn't even attempt a rescue. But to take her to Palti's house, then he might. So that's why he found a surrogate to care for Michal in order to lure David to his death. Now, how did Michal allow this? Alan asked before. So if you look at Rav Aviner in 17, Michal mitgalei b'chol shiur komata with kifuta, Michal reveals herself really in all her greatness, all her power here. Amnam hi bikaratit klapei David. She's a very critical person. The only other time she's mentioned is in the Haftarah for Shmini, when she lambastes David for dancing wildly when Aaron comes back. So she has a very strong personality. But ikar kocha mitbatei bekocha midotav lachatzim shel avia. Her main strength is in thwarting the pressures of her father. Michal's love was so great for David that it led to her self-effacement. And that's what happened here. She knew that if she didn't listen to what her father did, so David would never return to her. She wanted to find some way to return to David, even at the expense of renouncing her freedoms, her independence. And that's exactly what she did. Avatasha Michal Einava Mazokistit Tulotid. It's not a masochistic, dependent love. Ein Perisha Michikati. She's not erasing her personality. Rather, what she's doing is, in fact, demonstrating her power through the restraint, biding her time until David is able to return to her. What else happens? It's also a test for David. Why does he refuse Avner's overture? Rav Avner asks in number 18. Why does he refuse? What are we talking about? There's a civil war raging amongst Jews. Jews are killing each other. So David is going to say, I'm not going to end the civil war unless you give me this woman back. Where does that come from? So the answer is, yes. That's a test for David. How is he going to respond to his wife taken and to the recovery of his wife when he has the ability to free her? Before Rav Avinah writes, he's a melech, he's an adam. And adam means he's a person. He's a human being, and he has to act like a human being in saving others. An ethical person does not step on people on the way up. You know, the line is that you'll meet them on the way down, so be careful who you step on. David doesn't forget who helped him. He doesn't dismiss the individual because there's a greater societal good that is at hand. And that's really the case here. He's not going to not fight the descendants of Shaul unless he gets Michal back. And he's not going to forego Michal, dismiss her as an insignificant woman who helped him at one time, but now he's moved on to greater things. He's going to be the Melech? No. That would be an insult to David. In fact, the test is similar, in a sense, to the subject 2 weeks ago, Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda had the ability just to write off Tamar and say, oh, let her be killed, and I'll preserve my honor, and we'll move forward. But when he said, Sadkomi Meni, she's right, save her, so Chazal say, that's what made him worthy for Malchus, a person admitting his own guilt and saving the individual, even at his own expense. That's what made him worthy to be a king. And in a sense, the same thing here. David showed his worthiness to be a king by not abandoning Michal, despite the fact she was sent to another man, by reclaiming her and saying, I want to build my home with you. And you see, she was the preferred wife. We'll discuss later her children and what happened and her own punishment at a different time. Ultimately, what we have here, and of course all these things are orchestrated by the Hashgacha, it's another test for David HaMelech. David, who's yet to be the full Melech, very tragic, painful, very anguished test to see his wife with another man, but all to equip him for Malchus, all orchestrated by Providence in order to prepare David to build the royal house of Israel, where in fact individuals matter, not just society, but every person. That royal house of Israel, built with this foundation, endures forever. And that's why its re-inauguration we await daily. Achakelo b'chol yom sheyavo. Okay. All right, so...